Juno Afternoon is made possible with support from Hanson Gress, delivering IT support to local businesses for over 15 years. Our first guest on today's show, who's a writer that's earned awards such as Alaska Writer Laureate from 2016 to 2018, the UAS Faculty Excellence in Research and Creativity Activity Award, author of an American Book Award. Well, she's the author of Blonde Indian, which won an American Book Award, and also an honoring Alaska Indigenous Literature Award, and a finalist for the Kiriyama Prize and the Penn Nonfiction Award. The list goes on. Also, grandmother of four and great-grandmother of three, writer, Professor Emeritus Ernestine Sangalacht Hayes. Gunaschish.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for being on the show, and thank you for allowing us to be here.
My pleasure. You. Yes.
Did I get your name right?
Yes, Sangalacht.
Gunaschish. And is there a part of your introduction that you would like to add to that?
Well, I'd like to maybe make an annotation to the great-grandmother part.
Okay.
I have just recently graduated to first grade and just recently graduated to preschool. Great-grandchildren living with their mother, my granddaughter. So they're living with me, and they say that keeps you young. So I know why. It's because we're always jumping up and running after them. I get a lot of exercise.
All right. Among the introductions, too, is Professor Emeritus. You were just telling me that you taught at UAS since about 2003?
That's right. Yes, I began there as an adjunct in 2003 and gradually worked my way up to term appointments and was placed on tenure track some years ago.
Okay. So you have some readings for us here today. It's just nice to catch up with you, I think. The Alaska State Writer Laureate, among other things. Before we forget, though, you have a couple upcoming engagements that I thought we might want to share with our listeners.
Oh, that's right. Next week, I'm going to be on the Faculty of Northwoods Writer Symposium in Skagway. I was scheduled to be on that faculty last year, but, you know, might remember that my house burnt and I had only owned it for a month, so I had to cancel a couple of engagements. So I'm really glad that they invited me back, and this year I'm going and I'm remembering my passport so I can take the train ride, and I'm told it's a really fun thing to do. That's next week. And then in August, I'm very, very fortunate to be teaching two workshops at Camp Denali and North Face Lodge in Denali. And it's a family-owned business, and they emphasize natural history. They have a special emphasis series, and I'll be doing workshops there at both places and offer oral history narratives and then do some writing workshops. I'm really looking forward to it, and I believe there's still one or two openings there, so I've never been, and I'm really looking forward to it.
I was looking at images on the internet today of Camp Denali, and it just looks like it's out there.
Oh, I know. They are going to meet us at the train station and drive, and we're told that it takes several hours to get there from park entrance. And then they're going to drive us back, which we're told takes about half the time because we don't do quite as much sightseeing.
And does August 5th through 8th sound about right for the first one?
Yes, that sounds right.
And then August 9th through 10th or 11th for the second one.
That's right.
And as you said, there are still maybe spots. So some of our listeners could go and bask in your words under the shadow of Denali.
Wouldn't that be great? I'm just really looking forward to it.
Okay. Well, when I have an artist on the show like you, I always think it's nice to share their art near the top of the interview, just so our listeners can get a feel for what you like to do. Do you have a selection you could read for us?
Well, I do have something that I am from work in progress. I'm just finished, of course, with The Tao of Raven, and it occurred to me that a third book, I could call it, I could be presumptuous and call it a trilogy. And so I thought, I'm going to work on a third book, and I'd like to read just a tiny bit. It's the working title is Bury These Stories, an Alaska Native Memoir, and I envision it to be a memoir of the woman who married a bear. And I'm envisioning that she lives at the hem of both worlds. She isn't in the village and she isn't in the forest. She's between those spaces, and she knows everyone who still lives in the forest. These are her words. Every day I return to that twilight morning when I sensed a coolness at the back of my neck and thought perhaps my collar had fallen, my shape had shifted, my skin had slipped. At the back of my mask, I touch then and now reach again for the phantom, dazzling void, the horror of that emptiness, the fear of my own not being. Now I am old. Memories walk slowly behind me. I live on the top floor of an ever-growing, ever-flimsy, shaking cabin built on remembered graves. I ignore the stench of molding bodies in the basement, the stink of newly dead bodies piling in the basement, the moans of starving, homeless, fighting, incarcerated, dropped-out poor who have tumbled down steep stairs into the basement void. I live in a space between light and shadow. I live in the space between shadow and light. I continue to love twilight, dawn, and hesitant dusk. I live mid-mountain. Young Tom staggers beside the walking wounded. He stands with me at the podium. He invites me into the absent bar where I once fed coins to a jukebox and danced, and back at the counter I rang the bell. Young Tom limps alongside the bent man I glimpse from the safety of sober public transportation. He never meets my eye. I imagine myself walking between them, holding both of those haunted men by the arm, all of us laughing and proud and unafraid, attracting and welcoming warriors and companions on our way to a boarded-up house in the once radiant village where wine will be turned back into fresh water to be spilled from the mouth of a hungry raven.
Thank you for sharing that. Near the beginning, can you read that sentence again? The ever-shaking, there's a couple word combinations in there that are just tremendous. The ever-shaking cabin.
I live on the top floor of an ever-growing, ever-flimsy, shaking cabin built on remembered graves. You like that?
Yeah.
Nice.
You must teach writing.
I have to confess, I'm one of these people. I think you can tell I'm a real writer because I love my own words.
And then after that, there was another one, but I'm just going to have to wait for the book. Wow. Thank you. How would you describe a phrase like that to your students? How does one compose prose like that?
Well, I think part of my writing style is to interject headlong sentences and passages. I can't remember what the technical term for that is, but it creates quite a problem when you get to the publishing stage of line editing, because they always ask someone who knows that they're supposed to be commas there. And so they sprinkle commas everywhere, and I have to go back and take them back out and tell them, no, I don't want a comma there. I know commas, so if I wanted one there, I'd put one there. And so I'm not sure what the technical term is, but I call it headlong.
And thinking of this piece right here, what might you be trying to communicate to readers, if anything? I know sometimes artists don't like to be asked that, but is there something that we should be taking from that?
Well, you know, It is the truth that I do tell my students that writing is a creative writing, any kind of writing is a transaction that is not fulfilled until the reader picks up the page. And so my intent, sometimes not even, I'm not even aware of it, and sometimes I don't have an intent. I'm of the school of people who believe that stories live through us, and sometimes I write things with intent, and sometimes I simply write them and they have their own life. I do want to tell the stories of the woman who married a bear, and I'm right now contemplating and meditating on what the different symbols are, because thinking about it, you know, when I wrote Tao of Raven, I really thought a lot about the story of Raven and how he brought daylight to us and what some of those deeper meanings were. And now I'm doing the same with the story of the woman who married a bear, insofar as what happens afterwards, right? What happened, like with Raven in the box of daylight, we never heard about what happened with his mother and his grandfather left alone in a dark house. We never heard about that. And with the woman who married a bear, we see the bear form walking away, but we know that they're shapeshifters. And I wonder about the human form. And I think that when she's living at the edge of the village in her human form, I think she comes to realize that the death that she saw her bear husband suffer was in his bear shape. And I wonder if his human shape survived.
It's interesting. I hear you asking lots of questions. I wonder this, or I wonder how this is going to happen. And I guess it's a good indication of good writing where you're asking questions, you're looking for discovery as you write. Would you agree?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. A lot of times, you know, creative writers will write something. There's some saying that I don't know what I think until I've written it or something like that. And I think that's so true for creative writers. We'll write things, and sometimes even after they leave us, we don't know what they're going to mean to someone else.
I think it's coming through in your voice right now, but the process of writing for you, is it still fun?
It's gratifying, that's for sure. And I used to write notes to myself and scraps of save, scraps of paper, and then I graduated to rushing to the computer and writing notes down, and now I text them to myself. I have a whole series of texts of, and they're just like scribbled notes. I don't really understand what I was trying to say.
Oh, if you're just tuning in, we are speaking with Alaska Writer Laureate Ernestine Hayes about upcoming talks and speeches, writing in general, and just checking in with this professor emeritus who's taught so many people in our community, myself included. I had the honor of taking your writing class years ago, How to Write. Thinking about writing, I know you're emeritus now, so you'd get to write for yourself all the time. But thinking of our potential writers listening right now, what were a few of your favorite pieces of advice to give to your students these days?
Well, I'm sure you remember my absolute first favorite elevator tip is to remember something I called privileged position, which, because of the way we read and write in English, places a little bit more emphasis for the reader on the beginning and end of any sentence, paragraph, section, chapter, or book. And for our purposes, I think paying special attention to the last words in a paragraph and taking take advantage of that half a beat before the reader goes on to the next paragraph and put our strongest image at the end of that paragraph. Don't waste that privileged position on weak words. Put your strongest image that you want your reader to take with them into the rest of the story, and do that with every single section and paragraph. Nabokov does this, teaches us a lesson about this in all of his writing and speak memory. Every section is ended with just a strong image. There's a lesson there to be studied for years.
Yeah. I think you passed on to me once that not only everything that you just said and that last sentence of a paragraph is maybe where somebody's going to dog-ear the book and go for a walk or go get some coffee.
Yes.
And that's going to be the image that sticks with them.
Excellent. Right. And, of course, the other one, activate your verbs. Active verbs.
Yeah, strong verbs.
Yes.
You know, I'm looking at the piece that you were just reading for us, and there are still circles on that and lines. I can tell you're still working on it.
Well, here's the galley proof of Blonde Indian and all the places you can see where if they let me, I would go back and change, because there's a lot of passive verbs in here and there's a lot of missed opportunities for privileged position. And there's a lot of things in my first book that I tell my students not to do.
Okay. Do you have another piece you feel like sharing with us?
Sure. I had something included in Title Echoes this year, the wonderful journal that you've had work in that is administered by the talented professor Emily Wall. And I'll begin. This begins the story of the woman who married a bear. This begins her memoir. When I was still young enough to think that never is a word, the unyielding future approached me like a bear walking on two legs. Ominous, haunting, sad. My irresponsible heart left with him, and I followed. Each summer, our family gladly returned to a worn trail on a tall mountain to find our favorite berries. Along the trail in the lively sun, we boasted and teased and called out our various dreams. We could taste the juicy, tart hope of baskets full of berries at the end of the coming day. We measured our distance from each other by those calls. Sons, daughters, eager grandchildren, and melancholy elders whose roomy eyes reflected images of always one more child running up the trail to test the first soft, ripened summer berry. Always one more almost woman running up the trail to be lost in the unyielding embrace of a future walking toward her on two legs. That tall mountain held our village in its hands. It brought midsummer rains. Its familiar trails led to berries and greens and game. But as I traveled with this man who walked on all four legs, this bear that walked on two legs, I learned that what I had thought was a mountain was only a log, and what I thought were logs on a mountain were cedar embers crackling in a winter fire. I walked beside him past smokehouses along the river, past nesting godwits and runaway boys. My back bent, I scrambled across the low bush willow. I walked with that man along the riverbed and along the shore, through every forest edge and across every alpine tundra. I began to love the twilight. I already loved the man. I counted the changes coming over me. I admired my forelimb claws. Newly uncovered beetle grub delighted me. Soft flesh, thick, wormy savor. Together, he and I stood upright to taste the breeze, to test our unsettled future. With each step, we deepened our inevitable path.
To taste the breeze. That There's an active verb.
Yes. And a sensory impression.
Mm-hmm. Some imagery in there. Sense of place.
Thanks for this little workshop. I haven't had any chance to workshop my work. I really appreciate it.
What I thought was a mountain was a log.
Right. Wow. Right. That's in the traditional story. You know, of course, we always go back to Downhauer's works and, you know, make sure that we're on a good path by making sure we agree with what she's given us.
If you're just turning in, we are speaking with Alaska writer laureate Ernestine Sonkahlucht Hayes, Camp Denali, August 5th through 8th and August 9th through 11th. I'll put links on our website. To check that out, you can still sign up for that, it sounds like, the Special Emphasis Lecture Series. Northwards, I might be full. Is that next weekend?
That's next weekend.
It's worth Googling, though, because maybe yeah. You can come up and listen to you there as well. we're running out of time here. Do you have some words of wisdom you can leave us with today, please?
I certainly do. Decolonize. Smash the patriarchy. Undo capitalism. Resist.
Ernestine Hayes, gunashchish.
Gunashchish.
Your light shines brightest in the night. Tugged and pulled and I fell far below into the deep blue sea where light ends and only creatures that exist are free. Oh, 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 oh. Light shines brightest in the night.